This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery, just like Leicester City this season. So the only thing left to say is, you in? Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get rewards points delivered too. So that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants 18 plus. Rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
You are watching Leicester Till I Die TV.
Till I die.
Good evening, good day, good morning, good afternoon, good night, goodbye, hello, depending wherever you are in the world. Welcome along. It's sloppy seconds and we've got terrible thirds coming up at nine as well. This is LTID TV from Leicester Till I Die. Thank you for joining us. Whether you've been watching on YouTube, you are welcome. Please get your comments into the chat, but do keep them, please keep them respectful. Or if you're listening via your favourite podcast platform, thank you for lending us your ears. Well, it was going very, very well. It's not going quite as well at the moment for today. But look, we got crucified on Good Friday. Our promotion chances were resurrected today on Easter Monday. I know it's bad. I know it's bad, but it's so apt. Welcome along. I've been stood up by my normal two co-hosts. They've gone out on a date together. I'll be joined by a very special guest straight after this.
The TalkSport Fan Network is the ultimate on-demand destination for the UK's best fan-led football podcasts,
including Leicester Till I Die, independent analysis and reaction for the Foxes faithful.
The TalkSport Fan Network.
Unbeatable club-dedicated content created by the fans, for the fans.
Follow the podcast on the TalkSport Fan Network.
Indeed, and we're going to say a huge hello to Anil. How are you doing, sir?
Good evening. I'm very well. Very much love your Easter joke there. Very on par. I love it. I'm a big fan of the dad jokes. Thank God for that result. Let me tell you, I think if we'd had another bad one, it would not be the most fun show in the world today.
I have said, and we are doing a review show, like I say, later. So we will touch on the game, obviously, now, but we'll be doing the full in-depth review later on at 9 o'clock. But everybody says, like, oh, you know, to about Tottenham, they're doing a Spurs, you know, they're very Spursy. But look, we play Bristol, who are mid-table, nothing really to play for, probably not going to get into the playoffs, and they you know, we come away with a loss. We come to the barn door with a banjo. And then we come up against Norwich, second in the form table overall, fighting to secure their place in the playoffs. And we really, with a better team, and we play them off the park. That is so Leicester-y, isn't it?
It is. I mean, I think that's, you know what, sometimes when the pressure's off, it's like that, isn't it? So perhaps that explains a lot. But I mean, yeah, we really needed both that performance and result. So that was good to see. But let's not spoil it for your review show. Let's get on to the debate.
Exactly. This isn't going to spoil it, but like you just informed me, Ipswich are playing Southampton. And I think, I know you're watching it, so you'll keep us updated. But I think it's 2-2 at the moment. But Southampton, looking at this, 66% possession. Come on, Southampton. You've come back once. You can come back again.
But, yeah, let's hope the Saints do us a favour. But as you were saying off air, I think Ipswich have an unbelievable season. I think,
yeah,
to be honest, if it would be good for football if they got to the Premier League. I mean, hopefully it's with us. But I think what they've achieved this season, given the disparity in the wages and transfer fees, is pretty incredible.
It is. And in fairness, McKenna, the manager, I mean, before Enzo came along, I had two that I would have liked, and he was actually one of them. I think he's doing a very good job there. He's taken Ipswich, which would have been happy with mid-table, and they've just not gone away, have they?
Exactly, and they made a huge recovery themselves. Like, they fell away over the Christmas period, but they really strengthened in January. I think they brought 5 signings in, and that's really given this impetus to really burst back towards the top of the table. So, yeah, unbelievable job for them.
What I want to talk about today is our striker situation. Yeah, we've got Cannon out injured, so that leaves us 3. And it seems at the moment that for whatever reason, Iheanacho doesn't appear to be any longer in Enzo's starting thoughts, shall we say, starting lineup thoughts. He didn't even sort of get on the pitch today. And it's either Vardy or Daka. Now, look, Vardy, let's be honest with you, as I said earlier, if he was to walk in here now, I'd bend over and have his kids. he is a god as far as I'm concerned. Daka reminds me very much of Iheanacho when he first joined us, wasn't getting regular game time and was, you know, struggling because of that and took a lot of stick. But when he was picked earlier in the season, you know, he got, I think, was it 4 in 5 or 5 in 6, something like that.
Yeah.
So the main thing that annoys me, and I suppose because I do the watch-alongs, I see this from comments from people in the in the chat as we're doing the watch-along. And I said this, and now I'm not criticising Vardy for the season because, I mean, you know, we write him off at our peril. He's come back this season and, you know, I don't know how he keeps going. He's like a Duracell bunny. But he misses four chances against Bristol, 2 of which were gilt-edged. Nobody seems to moan. Daka misses 1 versus Norwich today. Everybody's is the villain. He's out. Vardy has a few touches in a game and everybody says, oh, well, nobody's passing to him. Daka has a few touches today. Get him off. He's crap. I mean, it seems so unfair. Is it just Leicester players that we've got to have a player that we hate per season?
It does feel like that, doesn't it? Because that's been labelled at many players you have. It is a bit weird in our fan base like that, to be honest with you. Why, compared to other clubs, we don't really get behind our players. I mean, I find it such a contrast. I actually lived in Germany for a bit and used to go to some games over there. Once I went to a Dortmund game. And you know what was amazing there is that they have a kind of like a hype man that sort of like tells the crowd what to do, which I don't necessarily agree with. But one thing that was interesting about it is I forget what his name was, but they had like a Turkish left back And basically, this guy was having a terrible game. He was getting absolutely rinsed. But what happened is the fans completely got behind him. They were like, come on, he needs our support. They all started chanting for him for a solid 5 minutes. And then the guy actually ends up scoring a goal and doing an assist and turned it round. And I was like, that really goes to show you, like, you know, it's funny because I do have to say, I feel like since the title win, I've definitely noticed that change in the Leicester sort of atmosphere when you go there, that there's more sort of expectation rather than just sort of getting behind people. And look, at the end of the day, people, they pay their money, so you're entitled to do what you want. I'll boo if I want, you know, is the one that people often throw our way, which is fair enough. But I mean, it is funny what a bit of positive mental attitude, if you remember the old TV advert, can do for you.
Yeah.
And, you know, you could try that. And I don't think it's that unsurprising that a lot of the players that we've had, when they get a run in the team and they get a bit of confidence behind them, they start playing better and the team starts performing better. You know, to be honest with you, something that's been quite obvious with Leicester over the last, I would say, 5 or 6 years now is we seem to be like a real confidence team. It's like when we're playing great, we can look amazing, but then suddenly the confidence can fall very quickly, which I believe is one of the big reasons for our massive deterioration in form. So, yeah, you're right. I don't really know why there seems to be someone like that. Maybe at the end of the day, it's kind of a funny thing. If you think about it, why do we even watch football? Why do we watch 22 men chasing a bit of leather around on the pitch, right? It's just a hobby. But I've always believed it's because for the everyday working man, it's something that is important to us, that you need a little bit of something to look forward to take the stress out of your life. And I think sometimes when we're there, what you're really doing is you're projecting your own issues and insecurities or joys even out on the pitch, which is why it's so sort of therapeutic. It's like, I often feel people who say that if you actually go to a football game and you feel the atmosphere, you will understand immediately what it's all about. And so maybe that's just what it is that when things aren't going well, you need that somebody to take it out on. And unfortunately, that's one of our players. But yeah, I very much agree. I think it's interesting what you mentioned there about Vardy missing those opportunities. I have to say, when we were watching along, yeah, we were a bit like, nah, it's just not, you know, some people have a bad day, he's done so much for us, but yeah, I felt he should have been swapped a lot earlier in that game, actually, when, you know, it's not your day, just put someone else that's on it. Go on.
No, I was just going to say, today, exactly what you said, but about Daka, I was screaming for him to be taken off 10 minutes before.
It wasn't
his best game, but he wasn't, you know, the ball didn't seem to be aimed at him very often, you know, so he's not getting the passes, he can't really do much. And my argument was, well, by bringing Vardy on, it's going to give the crowd a lift, and it's going to give the team a lift, and C, it's going to worry the Norwich defence. And I think it did all three of those things when he came on eventually. But is he that bad a player, Daka?
No, not at all. I mean, we've often analysed it like, well, firstly, some of the best runs we've had in the squad this season have been with him in the team. His work rate is fantastic. His pace is always a threat, you know, which is kind of like a throwback to peak Vardy, although he doesn't have the kind of awareness. And I think his bending of the runs needs to be developed a little bit there.
Yeah.
But he definitely troubles defenders because if they push up too much, you know, it's a big risk for them to take, which he's exploited on several occasions. He does work hard. He's got a good cannon of a shot. I think I've always said that he struggles with what I call finessed finishes. Yeah. So I actually cannot remember Daka ever kind of curling it into the net. He always just kind of smashes it. And, you know, if you, for example, say today, what people are, you know, chastising him for is he gets it and he's got caught between two minds. Is he trying to flick it over the keeper or put him round it? And I feel when he's got that sort of situation, it's something that he really needs to develop, that kind of, you know, I always remember, like, say, Thierry Henry, who obviously is one of the greatest strikers ever seen in the Premier League, but he always had this very almost trademark finish where he'd pop it out into his right foot and, like, just pass it round, curling it into the bottom right-hand corner. And funny enough, he actually struggled with finishing when he first came to the, you know, the Premier League. And I believe that their coaches probably just got him to work on one specific type of finish, probably until he could do it blindfolded. And then he got confident on it and he could always finish it. So I think that's an area that Daka needs to improve. At the end of the day, I still think it's like he's done very well considering he wasn't being picked at all to completely play his way back into the team and end up as being the first choice striker at times and playing through. At the same time, let's not kid ourselves. He came in for big money. I think it's 30 million euros, £23 million. So you would expect a striker of that repute to be pretty good, especially in the Championship, because I'm not sure there's another, well, Rutter for Leeds, I suppose, but there's not really many who's got that kind of, you know, what's the word for it, you know, reputation coming in. He has been outscored by Vardy, that's a fact. As you said, it's Vardy, age 37, who's still putting them away. That said, Vardy is very used to the Championship. He knows what it's all about. I think he kind of gets on it. So, look, for what it's worth, I very much agree. I'm not... Look, let's try get behind our players. Just a little bit of advice we could try. He's definitely good. But, look, I think, to be fair, it's one of those things that, like, we have been spoiled seeing Jamie Vardy play for us. I think it's probably quite likely we will never see in our lifetimes a striker as good as that, because... Yeah. It's not often you get a player who can score 20 goals a season outside of the top four or five teams. And Vardy's done it twice. And other times, I think, has scored 18, 19, helped us get through the Championship. You know, put it this way, I think if you get a striker that scores 15 Premier League goals, they would still be considered a very good striker. Right. I'm not even sure we'll get to that level. So everyone judges our players based on him.
Yeah.
And maybe that's just unrealistic, because if we do ever end up with a striker like that, I think whilst we were so fortunate with Vardy, is that not only was he so good, but because ironically he came to the game so late, is that that's probably why he didn't end up at one of the elite. I actually am still convinced that if Alex Ferguson was still in the Premier League, even despite his age, he would buy Vardy 100%, because he knows players like that. Like when they bought Van Persie when he was quite old, it's like he doesn't care about age. He cares, can they do it? And he will know that this guy can do it. So anyway, I'm off on the tangent, but I mean,
we always end up on these shows going off a tangent, so don't worry about it. But I mean, we must remember with Vardy, though, when he first came to us, it took him a good two seasons to settle down.
100%, but I suppose Daka has been here, I think, for a bit longer than that now.
So, is this not his third season now?
Well, there you go. But then if it's his third season, he's still not, you know, completely cemented his place.
But
in
is
the
he
team,
getting the chances? That, you know, I mean, once Vardy, you know, once he started scoring and we got promoted in the Premier League, he was in. You know what I mean? He was in every week, first name on the team sheet. You know, when Iheanacho first came to us, he was a bit part player. And, you know, if you're getting 10, 15 minutes here, you're never going to be able to get your touch and what have you. And to me, once Iheanacho had that run in the season, I forget which the season before we got relegated, he was top scorer, because he was our first choice striker. Daka came in, let's be honest with you, not at a good time for Leicester. we'd passed our best, gone past our sell-by date, if you like. He came in, and once he had that run, because it does take a couple of games to get, you know, match fit and back to sort of knowing and having that understanding with your teammates. You don't get that with 10 minutes here, 10 minutes there. He had that run earlier on in the season, and he was getting a goal a game. And unfortunately, then he had to go off to AFCON, obviously. But, you know, I just think, you know, cut him some slack. And how long did it take us to find somebody that we can actually forget talking about Mahrez?
Well, of course, yes, exactly. And we better hope we sign that fella, because, God, if we don't end up with him next season, people are going to be pretty upset. For sure. But I mean, maybe to play devil's advocate, we also signed Tom Cannon in the summer. So next season, I think it's very likely that the first strikers are going to be between Daka and Cannon battling for it. Will Vardy still be with us next season? I have my doubts. If he wants to, of course, I'm sure they'll let him stay. But at his age, you know, he may well be offered a lucrative contract in the States or something like that. And you couldn't begrudge him for taking it, having a little bit of a sort of like lads day out in the States or something like that.
You couldn't. And I think he's got a few options. He's got, like I say, the States, Saudi Arabia. Although
I don't see him going there, to be honest. I can't see him going there, to be honest. They pay him a lot.
He's already turned them down. I'm not sure if that's
true. Yeah, I'm not surprised. I just don't think.
No. And do you want to see if Sheffield Wednesday came knocking and said, have a season with us, that could be tempting for him. I think the problem for us is, I said at the start of the season, no, look, this will be his last season, go out on a high. He just wants to carry on playing as long as he can. My worry is, though, the amount of money he's on and the PSR regulations and rules that we seem to be breaking, whether that may be a problem. But again, who else do you want coming on with 10 minutes to go and it's 1-1 and you need a winner, or you're 1-down and you want to get an equaliser? Who better to come on than Jamie Vardy? Like I say, the crowd will be up for it, the team will, and it will scare the opposition. No matter how old he is, I think there's very few players can run as fast as him when they're 20, let alone when they're 37.
Yeah. But plus, these days, to be honest with you, I think for quite a few seasons now, he's not really been relying upon his pace. I think even when he finally won the Golden Boot that season, he wasn't killing teams with his pace. He was killing players with his positioning and making great runs. So he's, I think he does not get the credit that he deserves, probably because he plays for us, if we're being totally honest.
Yeah.
I think if he had gone to another big team and done it there, then people would be talking about how good he is. I mean, you see that kind of as the Maddison effect going on right now as well.
Yeah.
So for sure. I mean, look, I think even if he is on a lot of contracts, I'm pretty sure he's one of those that they will probably... Well, it's funny because Casper was kind of forced out, but I believe he might have had a bit of falling out with Rodgers. I think with Vardy, even Top will be like, look, at the end of the day, if this guy wants to stay, we'll let you stay. Maybe it'll be on a limited time contract, but the fans love him. As you say, just he could play the entire season not playing the game and just being the bench warmer and occasionally coming out to do stretches to get the crowd pumped. Yeah. And there is something to be said for that, for psychological effect. And I mean, it's quite sad to think in your mind, actually, what will be when he goes by, because, you know, I can't really think of a more iconic player, really. He's definitely the defining player of the last, how long has he been with us? 11 years now. Who's going to step into that mold? There may not be one. To be honest with you, the way modern football is, there may well not be a player that actually stays at the club for that long again and achieves so much. So, you know, these are just things to think about. So perhaps. But yeah, coming back to the point. So definitely I agree with Daka. But I mean, next season, he'll be battling with Tom Cannon. For example, Cannon, I think he can do the finesse finish. I think that's something that I've seen on his game. I think he's not quite as good physically. I don't think he's got quite that explosive pace or power shooting. But you maybe don't need that. So it'll be interesting to see. It's funny because when we signed Cannon, I remember looking at the videos of him in Preston and he looked quite promising. But I thought to myself, you know, for someone who's coming from Everton, and Everton at the time couldn't buy a goal, you were thinking, well, if he's that good, why is he not getting into their first team? Especially as they had that player, Ellis Sims, who is doing well in a championship that they also didn't recall. So it did seem a bit unusual. But to be honest with you, since when he played his games for us, he was extremely impressive, Tom Cannon. And, you know, not the finished article, but you thought to yourself, well, do you know what? To be honest with you, for $7.5 million, that looks like a pretty good signing. Like, I could definitely see under the right kind of getting the game time and stuff like that. Becoming all you're looking a bit curious there. Do you want to let me know what's going on?
No, red card for Southampton on 85 minutes and 7 minutes added time.
Oh, goodness. All right. Maybe we shouldn't watch that one for our own health, eh, Chris?
No, I shouldn't have clicked on that tab, should I?
Squeaky bum time.
Exactly. I've got my WD-40 somewhere. Hopefully won't need it.
Just to wrap up maybe with the Daka thing. I mean, the thing is, maybe where people are being harsh is that they're probably judging him as a Premier League striker and he didn't really do it for us in the Premier League. And that could still be a doubt. I don't think that's an unfair thing to say. I know what you're saying about, you know, not getting the chances. But the thing is, if you're coming in for like £23 million when we were a team that were competing in both Europe and the top end of the Premier League, the expectation was for him to be an extremely good player. The same with Boubacar Soumaré. And I think we have to be honest and say those two being absolute busts at the time is one reason we got relegated. I think if either one of those players, they didn't even need to be world beaters, but I think if they were just, let's say Soumaré, when he signed in, was as good as Harry Winks has been for us this season, I don't see Leicester getting relegated. If Daka, he doesn't score 20 goals, but he scores 12 or something like that across all competitions, maybe 5-6 assists, we probably don't get relegated. So, look, that's fair criticism, I think, of him. And I think as of right now, even though he's probably going to end up leaving at the end of the season, Kelechi Iheanacho has probably done more for Leicester than Daka has, even though he was only a bit part player. He was, you know, inspirational for us in our run to the cup final. That season when we had to play 3-5-2 and him and Vardy, he became the main man that season. Look, but like I say, I personally am quite a big fan of Daka, and I have to call what I see. Yeah. And I think when he came into the team, he more than proved his place to be there. And I think he has had good games. You can mention it in the review, probably not his greatest game against Norwich, but I don't think he was terrible. And, you know, he only really had one chance in scoring. Just so you know, Man City played Arsenal yesterday, and Roy Keane after the game said Haaland was a League One footballer. So there you go, because he didn't have a shot on goal in the match, but that's because he didn't get the service. So even the cyborg can, you know, yeah. Sometimes even the software in the cyborg isn't working properly.
I've definitely become more critical since I've started doing these shows, because I'm actually looking for things to critique now. And I think, I mean, you know, we say about Vardy, though, and yes, he is 37. Can he do a job for us? Look at Tony Cotty. You know, look at Phillips. If he's got youngsters around him, like Fatu, like Mavididi, he just needs to use his brain to get into those positions. He doesn't, like you say, he doesn't need to do the running. And he could certainly play that role. But I think with Daka or Cannon, unless somebody comes in and starts banging in, like you say, you know, 15, 20 goals a season, for years it's going to be, well, he's not as good as Vardy was, is he? You know, it's going to be the Mahrez effect, unfortunately.
Yeah, but maybe that's why we have the two strikers to rotate between the two. Maybe that's the answer. The answer is that you accept you're not going to have one as good as that, but maybe between the two, if one's having an off game, you've got the rotation option.
How many strikers do you think we need? I mean, do you think we need three, I suppose, to cover injury?
Yeah, I imagine that's what they're thinking. And I believe that they signed Cannon probably because they thought it's possible, especially with AFCON, that there might be one that goes. Well, if you remember, Daka was on his way out, right? He was signed in terms of Bournemouth. So that's a crazy scenario in itself, is that he may not have been with us. So that's maybe a bit unfortunate for Cannon. So yes, I think three is the answer. And therefore, you know, I think it's likely, I still think Vardy will leave at the end of the season. I just think, even though I agree that he could do it, but I also think for him, he may have to ask himself, does he want to do it? Because I don't know if you've seen this, but for example, in the MLS right now, Inter Miami just signed Luis Suarez. And at the moment, Suarez is sort of so injured, he has to take painkiller injections to play in every game. And he's absolutely destroying that league. So I can just see, and I think he would deserve it, Vardy going somewhere in the States and being literally absolute icon like he was for us, falling in love there, you know, and there's a lot of opportunities there plus big pay. So you wouldn't begrudge him for doing that, you know, because it's up to him. He can stay at Leicester. He probably will play, start maybe 10 to 15 games, come on as a sub for the rest of it. But it is quite a stressful league. Or you can take your whole family, have a great time, and, you know, the Interstate 76, etc., whatever you want to do.
He did have his own team that he could have gone to, but unfortunately they've gone out of business, haven't they?
But you never know. If you do well again over there, maybe those opportunities will arise again. You never know what will happen. I just think I think America would love him, to be honest with you. And I think he would love him.
Indeed. I think anywhere would love him. You know, like you say, you just can't not love the guy, can you? Right, we're going to move on to the next topic, which we'll do very, very quickly straight after this. This, I believe, will have an effect on which strikers we've got and which we've not got, as to who we've got to try and sell. Fox's PSR breach is biggest so far, which we'll come on to in a second. Leicester, we're coming out fighting, aren't we? Do you think that's the right thing for us to do?
Well, do you know what? I've got quite an unusual take on this, so much so that you might even get a bit blasted for this in your chat here, Chris. So I'm warning you in advance for that.
Well, thank you.
I think I look at this in quite an interesting way, I suppose. So the thing is that for me, I think one of the reasons why I love supporting Leicester so much isn't just because obviously it's the club that you've always grown up supporting and things like that, but we have that real kind of romantic story about us multiple times. So when I was first really getting into football, when I was a kid, we had the Martin O'Neill team. And that team came up from the Championship.
I feel old now, thank you.
Yeah, predicted to... you've probably seen Worthington and all that kind of the Ice Kings and stuff like that. Me not. But I mean, that was a team that I kind of really got into it. But for full context, that team was predicted to get relegated right away. They stayed up. They won the Worthington Cup on their first season. Yeah. Then we won it again. You know, we lost one final and we had a really good team. And you mentioned him before. Tony Cotty was in that team. Emil Heskey, a lot of other good players. And that team was a really amazing team to watch and a lot of fun. And I think that had like the right kind of spirit about them. Now kind of moving on to, you know, then the 15-16 was a similar story. And that's kind of like a real romantic thing. I know why you're just making that face. Do you want to reveal what's happened?
Go on, you go for it. I don't.
I believe that Ipswich have won in the last minute yet again with a winner. And
It's just finished now. But yeah, they got a 97th minute winner, Ipswich.
Unbelievable. Do you know what though? I think Ipswich are relevant to this story, right? So here's the thing. I mean, yeah, I think it's really important in football. Unfortunately, the way that things have changed at the moment is that it's quite cynical, right? Money's ruling the game. It's, you know, feels like a bit of a closed shop. And I do know that that's one of the things that, you know, fans are kind of taking issue with. But the thing is, right now, with us having done this PSR breach, is that basically in this division, the reality is that we are cheating. And there's no two ways you can sugarcoat it. By us not reporting our figures, right, we are trying to get away from being penalised by both the EFL and the Premier League. And the thing is that I believe if we submitted our figures, I find it likely that the EFL would say, Leicester, your wages aren't sustainable, so we're going to dock you 5 to 10 points this season. So if we were docked 5 to 10 points this season right now, we wouldn't be in the top two. We wouldn't be in automatic promotion and we'd be in the playoffs. And there's a chance that we could miss out on the playoffs. So whether or not we get promoted or not, that's going to be a stain on the club kind of going forward. And then next season, perhaps if we do go up, we're going to start on minus points, which is another issue. And unfortunately, there's this very, you know, real reality that we could end up not going up this season, then starting next season with a transfer embargo and minus points and having to sell some of our best players. And that really doesn't sound very good at all. In fact, that sounds alarming because then there's the opportunity that then we don't go up next season, then the parachute payments stop. And then are we going to get stuck in the championship like we did the last time round in the Pearson era? And that would be an absolute nightmare. So that's like a huge, huge issue for the side. And look, why am I bringing this up? I'm bringing this up because we as fans, there's nothing in our control to do that. We don't know what was going on or why. You just kind of follow the club. You know, maybe to give the club some credit, it does seem that they try to be competitive. So they obviously spent beyond their means to bring in some players. So that's kind of funny because quite often people are like, why doesn't Top dip his, you know, hand into his pocket and really back the club? Mm-hmm. Or maybe he did. Maybe just unfortunately, this time round, we didn't sign good players like the aforementioned Daka and Sumare. And that's kind of left us where we are. But yeah, it's a big issue. And, you know, what does this PSR breach mean? Well, if we get back to the Premier League, given that Everton were docked, I think 10 points was it on their first deduction,
yeah,
and ours is the biggest so far, and we didn't comply with the books, it's hard to see us not getting less than minus. Actually, on appeal, they got it reduced to minus six, didn't they? But I guess I'm saying, I think at minimum, we should expect minus six. And to be honest with you, I think they might completely throw the book at us because they think that that's like really not on. And then they give us the maximum possible penalty. And I think the problem is that even if we were to get promoted, I would be, well, look, I mean, it'd be tough to stay up anyway. If you're starting it on minus 12 points, I mean, it's going to be a tough season.
You see, I think minus, how can they give a club minus 12 points for trying to be competitive when they take not 10 off if you go out of business?
That's fair enough. I mean, that's not for us to define. I mean, so you know, I think the whole system is complete bollocks, to be honest. As has been proven. I mean, I think as well, unless they've got a good reason to argue this, is that, you know, those rules were brought in to stop clubs kind of doing what Leeds did back in, was it the early 2000s, where Peter Ridsdale was in charge.
Yes.
And they essentially gambled future revenues on success. They couldn't quite make it. And then they ended up the club, you know, really rapidly falling through the leagues as a result before turning it around. But the difference is with Leicester is that our owners or this ownership group has been in at the club now, I think it's since 2011. It might even be 2010. Mm. So they've been there quite a long time, right? One of the owners has passed away, yet they still retain the club. They've invested at the moment the best training facility in Europe, I believe. I think some other ones, I think PSG are building a bigger one, maybe even Liverpool. But at the time it was completed, it was probably the best. The team have won the Premier League. They've won the FA Cup. They managed to get fifth place twice. They were competing in Europe. So I think it's fair to say that these are owners that probably are looking at the long-term future of the club and, you know, not trying to, you know, jeopardize it. And I think their frustration is that they want to make the team competitive, but they're being unfairly penalised for trying to do that because of some arbitrary rules that don't really make that much sense to anybody, that no one can really understand, which I think if you really look into it deeper, is probably because when the Premier League was first formed, there was probably the understanding that certain teams were going to be treated a little bit better than other ones and have, you know, because I don't know if you've seen this, for example, but say in Spain, Real Madrid and Barcelona have 80% of the TV revenue deals because they are perceived to bring more value to the league than the other teams. So that's why you get these unfair leagues where it's very rare for another team to be able to challenge them because they're basically playing a rigged game from the very get-go. Look, I've thrown a lot of words over to you. So what are your kind of views on this?
Well, I mean, I think that, and I actually had Gavin McGaw on, who is a regular on Mark Sagar's Sunday Football Club show on Talk TV. Because I went on there last week and I followed Rick Parry, and I so wanted Rick Parry to still be on when I went on, but he'd left. And I had a bit of a rant, to be honest with you. And what I think the problem is, from where I see it, that they're saying to us, look, you haven't provided us with your accounts. And we're saying, well, we don't have to because we're not a Premier League club anymore. Yeah. And they're saying, well, hang on, you've got to provide it now because, you know, everybody's got to provide it earlier. You've all signed up to it. You know, then we told we can get it done in the same season. And we said, no, we didn't sign up for that, because that was signed after we got relegated. So you can't charge us using the rules of something we haven't agreed to. Yes, you can do it.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Away days are great, but when you can't play away, there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus. Serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com. And, you know, if we've done something wrong, we've done something wrong.
Well, but hang on a minute, Chris. Isn't that the case, though, that sure, we didn't submit our book to the Premier League, but then we didn't submit them to the EFL either?
But we don't have to submit them to the EFL.
Oh, right. Okay.
That's the thing. And why we got, when they first charged us back in, was it February or something, January, February, the lawyer got us off that because we didn't, you know, the dates, I don't think we're going to do it till the end of June. Look, yes, we have spent a lot of money. Yes, we've probably gone over that. And this was just a point here, as I say there, Leicester City's financial breach is biggest so far. Ex-Premier League CEO suggests heavy points deduction. Now, this, ironically enough, is Everton chief Keith Wyness has insisted Leicester City's financial rule breach is the biggest so far. The 66-year-old who served as CEO at Goodison between 2004 and 9 now runs a football consultancy. Leicester were charged with breaching the top five profitability and sustainability rules, PSR, last week on the 22nd of March. So if it is the biggest so far, I just don't see how clubs are going to be able to, you know, survive. Yes, we don't want clubs going out of business. You know, yes, we don't want clubs being in the position that Leeds were, because that virtually, you know, finished Leeds off. We don't want to see another Bury. But like Gavin said, we're not going to go bust. We've got, you know, owners who have got reasonably deep pockets, and if these owners want to put money into the you know, they would have no problem with putting money into another subsidiary of King Power. But they can't put the money into the, into Leicester City because of these rules. And yet the owners can afford to do that. You know, we've seen them write off 98 million quid at a time and put it into shares. So if they can afford to do that, and we're not going to go bust, kind of, you know, what is the problem?
I agree with that. But I suppose, again, to try and look at it the other angle. So the argument then is that Well, firstly, sure, the reality is, though, is that other teams haven't done that, and we are. So therefore, you can make the argument that we've had an unfair advantage. Like, you know, that's like saying we're going to run 100 metres, but I'm going to start 10 metres further up the pitch than you, Chris, and let's go. You know, that's literally not fair. That's not in the spirit of the game that everyone's... But of course, we know that other teams are also blatantly doing dodgy things as well. I mean, the Chelsea thing's another big deal as well. The other big thing that's happening at the moment is multi-club ownership. Like, even Man City do this, where players are essentially passed around like currency amongst their various clubs. And then when they become good, they bring them to Man City. So, for example, there's a big story in Spain this season of a team called Girona who are doing really well, and they've got a Brazilian winger. And funny enough, he's going to end up at Man City next season. What are the chances of that? City won the race, would you believe, out of all the other clubs that wanted him to get funny that, eh?
Yeah.
So there are ways of bending it around that. And okay, then let's say, all right, let's say free for all then. You know what? We're not going to have these caps in place. Teams can kind of spend what they want. Then what will happen? You know, be careful of what you wish for, just because then it's possible that we end up with like a league where just like all the teams are owned by Saudi, Qatar, Bahrain, all these kind of entities, US entities. People are pumping in the money. We've already seen with the Super League attempt what teams are really, you know, franchises really want to achieve. And it, to be honest with you, I feel like it's going that way anyway. That's what we're seeing.
I'm going to say we're not far off that.
To be honest with you, I think we're actually already there. I think the Super League already exists, and it's the Premier League in England. And I think that's what people are starting to realise, which is why they're pumping in there. Although maybe you could still see some of the other giants kind of join that sort of thing. So there could be an argument there. But look, at the end of the... Just, you know, though, for me, I do kind of agree. I think it's dumb, right? It feels like this system that was put in place was actually put in place to hinder other teams. I actually believe the real reason it was started is because some of the European giants, they got annoyed by seeing what Abramovich did with Chelsea and then what's happened with Man City, that basically the recognized elite teams of Europe all of a sudden were not the elite because other people essentially bought a place at the table, and they don't want other teams buying a place at the table. Because if you're Manchester United, if you're Bayern Munich, if you're Real Madrid, you don't want to lose that brand and that value you've got, and you don't want to become yesterday's man in the league and be, you know, a forgotten entity. But even if that's true, then, you know, what about for the rest of the fans that do support these other clubs that would like to see some success there? So, you know, I don't know. We'll have to see how it goes.
Yeah. How is it going to be competitive? Because, you know, it's, and I believe Chelsea, something might be happening on that in the near the near future. I can't say too much because Gavin told me in confidence, but he didn't do it on the show. But something may be happening. Apparently, the Man City one is other rules and what have you. We always used to joke about the Scottish League. Oh, it's either Rangers or Celtic all the time. That's what the Premier League's turned into. And Leicester gave them that hope. It was then reported in The Independent back in 2022 that a top dog at one of the big six said that ain't going to happen again. Business meeting.
Well, that's quite telling that was said, wasn't it? And that's kind of weird because I believe that season had really, really good viewing figures as a result of the underdog story that we were producing. So
He said, you know, don't you blame the Premier League, but it's not the Premier League. The Premier League loved our story. It sold it worldwide. And then, but it was the other big six. But the interesting thing is, and it was funny that there was an ex-Everton CEO that was saying that earlier, that Everton have just posted a loss today, according to Reuters, of £89.1 million, $112.52 million for the 22-23 season, almost double the figure from a year earlier. Now, you know, they're going to have to be done for that, aren't they? Again, I'm guessing. But I don't know. I mean, Everton, the 10 points was ridiculous. What was it? Sorry, how many points did they get? Was it?
It 10 started points? As 10 and reduced to 6 on appeal. But then I believe that they're going to get done for another one. So it probably is going to go back to 10.
I'd imagine. I would imagine so. But as I say, though, I don't see how that you can dock teams more points than you would dock them if they went out of business. It's almost like you're kicking people when they're down. But then Nottingham Forest came along and they said, yeah, we admit it. Here's the books, blah, blah, blah. And it was said, like, well, we were going to give them 6, but they were so helpful. we're only going to knock four off them. Now, Forest are questioning it and they're going to appeal. So Leicester, they've surely got nothing to lose by standing up and fighting.
That's probably the stance there, isn't it? But you never know. I mean, they might take a dim view of that and then really throw the book at them. So look, we don't know. But I mean, the issue is that then, you know, let's say we get promoted, then in the summer, you're going to sign players. Well, you don't know if this team's going to be a Premier League team, right? Without the penalty, you can probably be fairly confident that Leicester, with their track record and investment, they probably are serious about mounting a team to battle for Europe. So good club to join. But if you know that they're going to be odds-on favourites to be relegated because they're literally starting with a 10-point penalty over the next team, then who is going to want to go there? I'm sure some players will go there. You can still probably pick people up on loan and stuff like that, but it is going to be a big issue. Also, people who are at the club, are they really going to try so much? You know, you're going to do your job. But again, if you know starting at the season that the best you can hope for is to not get relegated, maybe it isn't going to appeal to everyone in the club. So that is other issues that are also going to be on my mind. I've also got the feeling with this, it's going to drag out for a long time. And that's a problem because you could end up in a position where, I could see there being a position sort of this time next season that maybe we are in the Premier League and we're near the bottom, but not quite down. But basically, it's like no one really knows if are Leicester 18th or are they 12th? They go, what do you mean? It goes, well, because if this appeal is successful, then they're actually 12. But if the appeal is unsuccessful, they could be 20th. So it's like, where are they? And that's not going to be fun for us supporters. And again, we got nothing to do with it. We're just watching the team that we support. So,
I did see a post that said that the league tables are being decided by the leagues and not by the results.
I could believe something like that. It feels a lot like that recent, isn't it?
It does at the moment with, you know, because Luton, they're in and out of that relegation zone, not by their own making, but they were out of it because Everton were in it. Then Everton were with your points reduced, they went back in it. Then Forest, it's just like hard to keep up with. But look, it is going to run this. I don't think if Leicester get promoted, whatever we do, we're going to be going for Europe again. I think it's going to take us a couple of years to even consider getting back to that. When you look at Burnley, and we're not Burnley now. Yes, we had a good run. You know, we're not that. We haven't got that gap now. You know, yes, we won today, but Ipswich have just won. Leeds will probably go on and beat Hull. Although, come on, Hull, do us a favour. So, if we do go up, I think even without a points deduction, we're going to be battling. Down at the bottom anyway. But it's going to go on and on and on. This, I'm sure, we'll still be talking about this in a year's time, to be honest with you. One thing I did now, these ones have changed slightly because Leicester went on and won today. So these were what were being discussed before we went on and won. Because having had the game today, I haven't had as much time as I did to prefer. Was Enzo getting a bit fed up with the fans? He said, this was after the Bristol game. Leicester fans have been brilliant until now.
Seems a bit sour grapes to me, to be honest with you. I mean, there's definitely been an undercurrent all season where even though we were absolutely beasting the league, a lot of fans weren't happy. There's a lot of people that don't like his style of football, which I found quite interesting, to be honest, because to be totally honest with you, I've never really seen Leicester being a team that has an identity in terms of the way that they play football. It's always just been a kind of like average, mediocre team. Yes, counter-attack in 15-16, which was good for one or two seasons. If I'm being honest, the most exciting the team's ever been has probably been under Brendan Rodgers, which is probably crazy to say, but probably true. So this season, sure, that might style might not be for everyone, but at one point we were 17 points clear. I think the manager is entitled, because, you know, what if the season panned out differently and we had a bit more like what Leeds did or Southampton, where we started slowly and then built up into it. Then maybe actually fans would be, for example, say Leeds, they're loving Daniel Farke right now, even though they actually technically have, well, we'll see what the result of today's game is, but, you know, they were doing worse. So it's all about this kind of momentum. So I think he does have a point there, but I do have to say now that my gut feeling with Enzo is that I don't think the fans are ever really going to love him. I think that's been obvious for a while, which I think is a shame because I don't really think that's his fault, but there's just something that I can see. And it's interesting because I've noticed it's a difference between the fan base. I think the younger fans actually quite like him. But it's not even just the older fans. I'd actually say the middle-aged fans, actually. So maybe more between sort of 40 and 50s. They're not liking him at all, to be honest with you, from my observation at least. And as a result of that, I think inevitably, and we've already seen a preview of it so far, is that we're going to get into a sticky patch. And I think when that sticky patch comes, unlike other managers where they might get behind him a bit more, they're not. And I don't know. I mean, I can... As horrible as it sounds, even though we might still end up getting promoted, even as champions this season, I sort of feel like I can see the beginning of the end already, as bizarre as that sounds. To be honest with you, I kind of feel that like way about Brendan Rodgers. That season where we choked to Roma in the semi-finals of the Conference Cup, and I think we only finished 8th or 9th, it was just obvious to me that, like, okay, this maybe it won't happen immediately, but there's no way that we've seen the peak of that era already. And I really hope it isn't true, but I kind of feel that, like, being 17 points clear and being like the, you know, oh, they're going to be on for the record points though within the championship till they're not, is probably as good as it's ever going to get under this era, unless you can turn it around. One thing I will say, I don't want to creep too much onto your kind of review show, but today he did do some things that maybe I hadn't seen him done before. Specifically, one, actually used substitutes, shock horror, and the second one of, like, actually still attacking even when we took the lead. And if he were to do those things, then I think the crowd might get behind him a bit more. But in general, why I don't think fans have taken to him is they just feel that he's too cautious. You know, I've spoken about the Man City Arsenal game yesterday, and that was a 0-0 absolute snooze fest. And to be honest with you, I actually think that really both teams, neither team really wanted to win it. They just didn't want to lose. So they both played with the handbrake on, and that was a bit disappointing. Whereas when Man City played Liverpool, they friggin' went for it, right? And they could easily, it could have backfired. In the end, they got something out of it, but that was admirable, and it made for a great game to watch. And I think that's what, to be honest with you, I can tell already. Like, to be honest with you, you just mentioned Ipswich there. They've won again 3-2. They've had so many games this season where they've done it, and I can tell you that the fans would much prefer a manager like that. I think they'd even... wouldn't care if they lose games, a lot of them, if they're winning, playing exciting stuff, getting people on the edge of their seat. I just think that's the sort of team and club that we are. And but I don't know if we'll ever get a manager like that. Like, just for another angle, because, you know, my background is that I got some kind of coaching badges myself and stuff like that. So the reason why I'm quite a big fan of Enzo is that I think he's on the most cutting edge in terms of, like, how modern football should be played. Which is, like, at the moment, the real top teams have got a huge emphasis on playing through the gaps and playing out and around the press to kind of counter the gegenpressing Liverpool style. So I think having a manager like that, in terms of the ceiling, how far the team could go, is incredibly high. It could be, you know, it's likely that Roberto De Zerbi of Brighton, for example, is going to end up as either the Liverpool or Bayern Munich manager at the end of the season, even though Brighton haven't won anything, right? Haven't won anything, but his coach, their coach, may end up in that position. Yeah. And Maresca's kind of that ilk. But yeah, like I say, I mean, that's all well and good. But then again, as per Brighton, you know, okay, they have won one thing, which is probably net spend champions or something like that. You know, net spend champions, you'll never sing that. Well, great. Congratulations on your 120 million, but I'll take my FA Cup, Premier League, and getting relegated and being a PSR cheat in the championship, to be honest with you. It was more thrilling a ride in the roller coaster,
I think. And in reply to what you were saying, I mean, I'm sort of one of those older fans, like you, we said before. I mean, I do remember Worthington, Weller and Glover and all that era. That's when I started following them. I was surprised when we appointed Enzo, completely left field. I wanted either Thomason from Blackburn Rovers, who's obviously now the Swedish manager, or, believe you know, McKenna at Ipswich, which is for once proving me that would have been a good choice. Not saying any better than Enzo. Problem is, with a lot of fans, I don't criticise, and yes, I will criticise on individual matches because we're fans and we're allowed to do that. So, you know, if he gets it wrong, doesn't make subs, whatever, I will criticise. But as a season, we'd have taken this at the start. It's just that we had such a big lead and we kind of, as you alluded to, we've lost it. If it had been the other way around, we'd have all been singing, you know, his praises. Thing is, this is the way that football is going. You don't win anything playing football, I don't think, the way we played it in 15-16 when we won the Premier League.
Yeah, exactly. You know?
But that's, I mean, I used to have a guy that used to come here and I ended up having to ban him because he was just so, so negative. It was like, I'm sure it was Vardy's love child because he loved Vardy. You know, he'd have been saying against Bristol City, he would have been in this, oh, keep Vardy on, he'll get one in a minute, you know. And all this is boring football. What are we, why are we playing like this? And how can you be bored when we're 17 points clear at the top of the league? We, you know, football moves on. We don't play 4-4-2. That won us the World Cup in 1962.
Yeah.
Nobody plays that anymore. And the way that we played in that league caught everybody out. There were a lot of teams that were having problems themselves. Man City got rid of the manager. Klopp hadn't really settled. Tottenham did a Tottenham, you know. So there's a lot of things that sort of went our way. But we played exciting football and we won the Premier League. But that ain't going to happen anymore. You know, football moves on. Football evolves. You know, you look at any sport and the way, you know, even tennis players play the game now or, you know, or cricketers, it is completely, completely different. And the problem, I think, with us as fans is that was such a high. I mean, when we won the FA Cup, were we playing the same way as when we won the Premier League? No. You know, and yet we won the FA Cup. So, yeah, I just think, you know, we have to move on. But I think a lot of fans hark back to, well, we won the Premier League when we played it.
Yeah, that's very jaded thinking, I think. But yeah. I think there are some things we should say there. One, it does appear that this season, in terms of budget, our budget for the team is 20 million more than the next team, which is Leeds. That is a considerable distance. So to be honest with you, you should argue with that bigger gap, we probably should be 17 points clear. And as of speaking, we are actually not top of the table, although we've got the game in hand. So that is quite something to say. And I think the second thing is that Lorenzo has got to take a lot on the chest, like in terms of man management and how he's been unable to pick up a team on the slump like that. That is poor. Like he's got to look at himself in the mirror there. You know, that is not good for a team to give up a lead that massive, especially as some of the games that we were losing to, like that Leeds one was so frustrating. But you know what? On looking at it impartially, going away to Elland Road, that's always going to be probably the hardest game of the season. So we've lost that, fair enough. But, you know, the Borough, the QPR, Bristol City, these were poor performances and poor games and wasn't able to rectify things and he wasn't able to get there. And, you know, the other thing that is attributed to him is he's very stubborn in his ways, which is true. And the thing is, I would say that the last time we were in the Championship with Nigel Pearson, a lot of the times we were good in some games. At some games we were not so good, but we had a kind of attritional style. And basically what I think Nigel realised, which is very true, is that if you're playing 11 versus 11, but your players are man for man better than the other team, then to be honest with you, you don't need to play the most sophisticated brand of football. You basically just need to win your individual duels and you'll probably win the game. So Enzo plays a very specific style of football where he's trying a patient and intricate style. And when it works, it looks great. But the thing is that let's play devil's advocate and say, all right, you know what? We're just going to go back for more of a traditional 4-3-3. We're going to have two fullbacks trying to overload on both sides. Do we have any players that could be good at fullback? Like, I don't know, Ricardo Pereira or something like that. Portuguese international, played for Porto. You know, one of the best fullbacks in the Premier League on this day, as an example, right? We could go for a system like that. And if we played a system like that, in my opinion, I think we'd probably concede more goals. And I also think we'd win games like 5-2. And I think we'd be a bit more like Ipswich. And he's never done that the entire season. And, you know, the Championship. It's a very long attritional season. It's competitive.
It is.
So I think to expect yourself to play this intricate style brilliantly every single week is quite naive, in my opinion. I don't think it's a problem him starting that way. But like I said, when it gets to 60 minutes, because I think the problem is in some of the games, like, to be honest with you, the Bristol one was one like it, but I think also QPR and Borough. The worst thing is when we went behind, it wasn't just that we went behind, but you just thought to yourself, I don't actually see us winning it because we're too patient in playing it. So you're trying for this perfect goal to score three perfect goals. Whereas if you're just saying, look, let's just ping it into the mixer a bit more. I'm not saying that you even have to necessarily change the style that dramatically. You could still keep the basic structure and shape, but instead of going for as much control, you say, do you know what? We're going to accept that the game is going to be a bit more murderable, a bit more Power League bouncing around. But we are going to make the bet that because we've got the better players, we will win that more times than we lose it. There are some teams in Europe that play a bit more like that. Atalanta, Leeds, when they had Bielsa, played that style as well. And they kind of bet on the fact that they would win it that way. So that would be, from my personal, actually looking at it from a coaching point of view. And at the end of the day, with management, that's the thing in coaching and tactics, is that, you know, the point of tactics is to play the way that is going to win you the game. That is fundamentally your job. So it's all well and good being tied to a very specific style and believing in an ethos. Great. But if I'm top, I'm not paying you, Enzo. Yeah, that's great. Brilliant if you can do that. But did you win today or did you lose today? Oh, you lost? Well, you know, you've got 20 million more budget than the previous team in the league. So could you explain to me why? You know, maybe there are some things you could do. You know, I got you all these substitutes. You asked for two wingers. I got you that. But the other one, you never play. Yunus, etc. Anyway, so that's just where I'm kind of going with this. I think that's something that he's got to learn. Because what I will say is I've seen many managers accept that. And they've come up with a plan B or changed their beliefs somewhat. Including, by the way, a certain Mr. Pep Guardiola did this. And has achieved success with them. And just to kind of point it out with Guardiola, of which he was part of that treble winning team, is that the change that they made is by bringing Erling Haaland into the team, they actually opted to play a slightly more chaotic style than they did before. Previous two leagues that they won without a recognised striker. They had a false nine and they had players interchanging positions. With Haaland, they were accepting that sometimes they're going to have a bit messy. But they thought, you know what? The style might be messy, but we've got this absolute cyborg up front that can't stop scoring goals. So hear me out. Why don't we just put the ball into him as often as we can and we'll probably win games? And guess what? They did. Yeah. So, you know, that was them going for plan B. Liverpool in the last season and a half changed their style. They actually put an inverted fullback. They moved Trent Alexander-Arnold over. So they changed their style of play a little bit. Arsenal changed their style of play. All the teams, Manchester United, the first Fergie team played 4-4-2 and the second Fergie team that won the Champions League played 4-3-3 with Rooney, Ronaldo and Tevez. So, you know, and that's the thing. We are playing modern football, but teams will catch up. So what is the football meta now? Of playing this inverted fullback, probably in 2 years' time, that won't be the way to play. So he'll have to change his tactics anyway. And I think he's got to recognize that a little bit. So sorry, that's my massive rant that I've just gone on.
No. Rant away. This is the Channel 4 rants. You know, but I'm gonna play devil. I'm not gonna say I disagree with you.
Yeah.
On just three of those points, but I just want to play devil's advocate, and then we'll probably round the show off. You did that. Enzo is stubborn, but then Nigel Pearson was, but then Martin O'Neill was.
Yeah.
Martin O'Neill, let's not forget, when he first came in, you know, the fans wanted him out. They were accosting him in the car park, let's forget.
Yeah.
And Pearson had his moments as well. And I think that... Again, say playing devil's advocate, do we want a manager that is going to change the system every week because of who they're playing? And the players just, well, what am I doing this week? Well, you're playing Leeds, so we're going to play this way. And I agree, have a plan B. You must have a plan B. I agree with that. But you've got to start, I think, with the same, because that's what players get used to. And if they are being changed every week, then... I think it does confuse them. Whether they should be confused or not, obviously, is another matter. Like I say, Enzo, he's new as a manager, so technically he is still learning. He's not been a manager for this long at a top club anywhere, so he is still learning himself. Yeah. And like I've just said, you know, Martin O'Neill struggled when he first came in. And Pearson, you know, on that Great Escape year, he would not play Albrighton. He did not want to play. He was upset, I think, because Albrighton's missus posted something on Twitter.
Yeah, he played him in the end, though, didn't he?
He played him. Because he had to. Yeah, you say he had to accept it. But my God, you don't come across anybody more stubborn than that. Lovely guy off the pitch. Lovely guy if you meet him. But no, he was the most stubborn bugger I'd ever. And of course, let's not forget a certain Northern Irishman that we had for a few years. So there's something to be said, I guess, for being stubborn is what I'm trying to say.
I agree with that. I'm not saying he has to change the formation, although I do think that 4-3-3 would destroy a lot of teams in this division. But what I guess I am saying is that you could play exactly the same system where the players are playing, but it could be a change of mentality. Because, like I say, the style of play is to try and move the... Like he likens it to chess, is to move the pieces out of the way and then to play the ball into the gaps. The thing is, why it's a style that can either work or not work is it requires on a lot of things working all at the same time. So it relies on you being able to pass the ball in well enough and fast enough that you can move those pieces out of the way. And then the player has to make the run at the right time. Then you have to play the ball into that space at the right time. And then you have to finish it. So that's why it's difficult. And that's why when it works, it's basically you can't defend against it. But the thing is that sometimes when you play a style like that, if you are having an off day, it probably isn't going to work. So coming back to 15-16, I think one reason why Leicester won that year and the other teams that were challenging, which were Spurs and Arsenal, didn't, is they too were playing styles where when it worked, it looked amazing. But if you had an off day, you didn't get a result. Whereas the thing with Leicester is when you're playing that kind of counter-attacking system, you could put in a blatant 6 or 5 out of 10 performance and you could still get the 3 points. And you know why? Because all it took was one ball over the top, you could get onto it and you could finish it. So we're in a different position here because we're not the underdogs in games. We're the ones that are expected to win. But as I say, you could play exactly the same personnel, but rather than being so intricate, you could just play more direct. Yes. You can literally play it into the box more often. You could commit more men forward. You can accept that on the counter-attack, you're much more susceptible on the break. But the thing is that you're going to make more chances and you're prepared to do that. And I guess that's like having on your oven. Like you've got it cooking at 180. And you know what? I'm going to take a gamble, Chris, because I've got a meeting coming up. So I'm going to turn it up to 220. And I might burn my pizza, but I might also get it done quickly and I can eat it and then get in time for my meeting. And you take that risk. And I just don't think he does that. Maybe today he maybe did it a bit more, which was nice to see. That's the point I'm trying to make. He could make that change consciously and he could tell the team in terms of how to do it. And I think if I look at Ipswich, I think that's the thing that they have mastered, is they play a certain way, but then when they are behind and they really need the result, is they seemingly are willing to do that, to like just go for it. And I have seen some games where it backfired. I think it was against Preston or something where they lost 2 or 3 nil at home. They might even have got it back to 3-2 or something like that. But ultimately they lost because they were too overzealous. But the amount of times they managed to win the game as a result of that is not a surprise in my opinion. So look, do you know what though? I think it's kind of me irrelevant saying it, because do I think he will ever go that way? I just don't see it, to be honest with you. I think especially with him coming from the Guardiola school, he's...
I'll make this the last question for you though.
Yeah, yeah.
Is this the style that, look, before all this blew up about PSR, FFP, PPI, whatever it is that we've been found guilty of doing, that this is probably the style that maybe does well in the Premier League? And he's played this style to try and get ready for the Premier League?
Yeah, that's an interesting one, because all season long, there was that one point where I felt, wow, I feel like this team would finish 9th in the Premier League without adding any players. Yeah. And now after the run that we've just been on, I feel like this team will finish 19th in the Premier League unless we add more players. So it's hard to say. We had that game against Bournemouth in the Cup where we outplayed them, even though we had a second string team. The Chelsea one, I know people think we had a good performance in that one. Personally, I think we're really looking at that with blue tinted glasses. I think the reality is the stats showed that we probably should have got a tonking that game, but we didn't. So it remains to be seen. But the thing is the use case is to look at Burnley. And Burnley also played a similar style. They've gone up and it just hasn't worked and they're going to get relegated. So we don't know. But to be totally honest with you, I think we would have to add more players. And I think that is my caution, is that if we're going to go up with this style of play and the minus 10 point penalty, I'm probably not going to be able to sign players. It doesn't look too good to me, to be totally honest. Yes, I do think that a midfield of Keenan Dewsbury Hall, Harry Winks, and then Wilfred Ndidi is probably Premier League quality. So that gives you half a chance. I think Fass has shown himself in recent games to be more of the Calamity Jane that he was when we were in the Premier League. Vestergaard's had a few dodgy games off as well recently.
Oh, no.
So,
have you seen the score?
No. What is it? 1-0 to Leeds?
Yes.
Well, that can happen. I mean, look, to be honest, if you let them do that, I mean, the way that we've got to look at it is I think we've got to win all of our games remaining, to be honest with you, and hope that that's enough. We've only got, I think, is it 6 or 7? So there we go. That's the thing. Problem is, if I'm being honest, I think because we've got to play both Southampton and West Brom, I don't think we can win all of them.
No.
I hope I'm wrong. We are a team that's capable of doing it, but I'm not sure that we will. But look, they have to win all their games too, so we never know how it's going to go. Looks like it'll come down right to the last day of the season.
It does, when Leeds play Southampton, hopefully. But, look, Anil, I must let you go. But thank you so very much for standing in and coming in and helping me out today. Really do appreciate it. Do you want to give yourself a shout-out if you want people to follow you, where they can find you?
No, I'm not really about that, to be honest.
No, that's fine.
So just make sure you like and subscribe this video. You're doing an amazing job, Chris. I think it's one of the best fan channels. So keep it up. Leicester till I die.
Appreciate it, mate. All the best, mate. Good luck. And fingers crossed, we'll be talking about playing Liverpool and Manchester United next season.
Indeed. Have a good one.
Take care. All the best. Bye-bye. Thank you very much. Bye-bye. So thanks very much to Anil there for coming on. Like I say, while Dave and Kate are off, stick with us because we were going to be reviewing the game, the weekend's games at 9 o'clock with Brad. We'll also be following the second half of Leeds versus Hull. Leeds currently are 1-0 up, so we're back down to third. But look, hey ho, could have been worse if we lost. But thanks very much. Please do subscribe if you are new. Please smash the likes if you've enjoyed it. Come back at 9 o'clock. Thank you for watching and thank you for listening if you have been doing it via your favourite podcast platform. Really do appreciate it. I'll see you at 9 back here with Brad. Take care, everybody, and look after yourselves. And I'll see you in about 43 minutes. Bye.
Thanks for watching. These videos are tremendous. You'd better like them too, or I'll be back.
The TalkSport Fan Network is the ultimate on-demand destination for the UK's best fan-led football podcasts.
Including Leicester Till I Die, independent analysis and reaction for the Foxes faithful.
The TalkSport Fan Network.
Unbeatable club-dedicated content created by the fans, for the fans.
Follow the podcast on the TalkSport Fan Network.
It's the 90th minute. All your mates are around. You've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.